welcome to the Marvelous Post-Blip Podcast, the podcast of all things Marvel on the Fangirl Zone. I am Sean Fangirl-ass.
I'm Hulk Steve.
Hulk Steve, big and green. And this is Mischievous Dave, and today we're talking about episode 3 of season 1 of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, titled The People Against Emil Blonsky, written by our friend Jessica Gales, Jessica Goa, and directed by Kat, I always want to say Cairo, because Cairo is usually with an A. It could be Cairo, but it's C-O-I-R-O. I'm still going to say Cairo until Kat corrects me over Twitter. Like, what is your problem? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Are we doing initial reactions at all, people?
I was going to say so before we jump in. So okay. I say we should do an initial reaction. But Dave, since you brought it up, how about you give us first?
My big mouth. Okay. There's two things. I'm starting to like it better. No, it's fun. Who says it can't be fun?
Right.
I'll tell you who says it can't be fun. Terry Metalis, our buddy. Yeah. He doesn't like it. He goes, I guess what? I'm not. Well, yeah. He doesn't like it. I'm like, I read that today. I'm like, okay. And of course, a lot of people are like, whatever you say, Terry. Right. You hate it, we hate it. I'm like, it's not bad. Are you kidding? The twerking at the end didn't need it. Not that they're not talented, but
it's just something stupid and funny.
Yeah, stupid and funny. And apparently that's the direction they want to go in. And that's funny. After the last episode, I had this premonition that we're going to see a severely dark turn. I don't know what gave it to me. I just, you know, and I'm pretty smart, you know, as everyone knows. And I'm like,
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you.
Okay. Everyone says that to me, too. I just got this suspicion, like, something's going to take a dark turn. I don't know what it is. I don't know when it's going to happen, but there's my tinfoil hat theory. So far, it's just funny and goofy, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I have this sneaking suspicion we're going to get punched in the face.
I don't think you're wrong. I think something's, like, probably towards the end, it's going to be something big, and I think you've already brought it up in, I think it was the first episode.
Yeah, what did I say?
About Hulk's possible son. So I think that may be what the thing is going to be. It's going to be something we were expecting.
That would make it about the Hulk, though. We don't want it about the Hulk. We want it to be about She-Hulk.
Yeah, but I just think it's going to be something really... concerning that somehow.
Oh, I know. They'll blow everyone away or find out they're... I got my hashtag fingers in the air. Kissing cousins.
No.
Sorry.
No.
Someone always goes there, and it's usually me.
All right, now to get away from that part, and don't you dare give me kissing cousins on your you're rating this. But what's the rating?
I can't tell you. It has to do with Miss Piggy's fingers and stuff, big and green. So we'll just skip ahead of me and go to Steve.
Oh my God. All right, Steve, how did you feel about this episode?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. Nice seeing Wong and, of course, Jen breaking the fourth wall again, telling us that, no, it's not about these special guest stars. It's really about me.
Yeah, funny. She leaned in and said something about Andy, like 3/4 or 2/3 of the way through the episode. I thought that was the best one. She was right. Off camera, and she just leaned into the camera. And I'm like, well, that ties up that storyline. I'm like, thank you. Thank you.
So are you going to give it a rating, Steve?
I'd give it 3 out of 5. Working She-Hulk.
All right. Cool. A regular Hulk would have split those pants.
Well, maybe they're really good spandex. You don't know.
Yeah, right.
I enjoyed it because it was just kind of goofy. And again, sometimes you need that. And then the fact that they purposely put some of the actual things that people were saying about this when it was announced into, you know, we all know the part, into the Twitter feeds that they had. I love that they used actual ones. It's like, yes. So basically what they're saying is the tears of you gatekeeping pseudo fanboys, nobody cares.
Right.
So I thought it was funny. And then they were just kind of, that's why I kind of felt like this episode was all kind of making fun of stuff. Because it's like, oh, you don't like it? No, boo-hoo. You know, and that's what I thought they were doing the whole time, basically. Although interesting how some of it starts and makes me wonder if possibly your premonition, Dave, has something to do with the way Abomination is going to come back. Because I just feel like it's going to happen again, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll keep my, can we call that stick, divining rod to the ground and see what I can pick up.
I would probably give this one a 3 out of 5 as well. Just 3 out of 5 legal aids.
Sexy legal aids.
That catfish people. But anyway. All right, let's jump into the recap. She-Hulk represents Emil Blonsky, a.k.a. the Abomination. But his parole hearing doesn't go quite as planned. Does anything ever go as planned in most of these shows?
Nope.
Okay.
Not happening.
So Jennifer Walters storms into Emil Blonsky's holding cell. Who storms into a holding cell? That's like, the worst criminal ever. I'm so mad. And she is mad.
Yeah.
Footage of him not in prison. And as the Abomination is circling all over the news. And it is for sure going to ruin whatever case Jen has been building for him. This is another crime and absolutely destroys whatever chance he had of getting parole. Wait. Emil explains he was forced to leave his cell. Wasn't his choice. And who would do such a thing? Sounds like something wrong to me. Exactly. Wong. Just Wong. Nikki tells Jen because she is on the case trying to do cyber stalk. His internet presence is a little chaotic. He's either a sorcerer who lives in New York, or a librarian who lives in Nepal, which is pretty accurate.
Yep.
Yeah.
But don't worry. She sent him a thirst trap, her holding a bunch of books, so he's probably going to get in touch soon, you sucker.
I will tell you, I could not understand what she said in that moment because it was so fast. I rewound it a couple times, and I'm like, what is she holding? What?
She's a quick talker with great legs.
So I'm glad you figured out what it was. And I love when we get Jen driving because another cameo. Yeah, Jen knows it's happening. I know you can't wait to see Wong. I get it. She tells us after taking her hands fully off the steering wheel, which, you know, isn't very unsafe. But I love the fact that they're also showing, yes, I'm breaking the fourth wall. And you all know nobody's really driving this car. Come on. Because I just thought that was funny because so many things, you know, you're watching, you're like, that looks so horrible in the background. So that was like chef's kiss. Love that it happened. I just half expected her to put her like hand under her chin and like lean on the the middle thing. Awesome. And be like, yeah, you know, I just want to make sure you don't think this is one of those cameos every week show. Well, okay. Then it's like, okay, it's only the third episode. Well, okay, except for Bruce and Blonsky and Wong. Okay, just remember it's actually about me. Like, what is it?
So how do we feel about the cameos? Are we into it? We like it? Because I'm dying to see you-know-who come on the shows. I don't have a problem. Do you guys have a problem with cameos?
No, I like this. I especially think it's the way they're doing it. It's just kind of amusing, especially all the, I was literally another person. And, you know, how everything is like, well, you know, it was government sanctioned. So it's like giving us everything from all these other things that nobody knew about. And, you know, of course, which it might be further down, but if you paid attention to Wong's profile, there was something nobody knew about him.
Yeah. They all live in the same world. They must interconnect. You know, that's a failing on CW or Warner. You know, they're all out there. Hey, Superman, what is your cousin doing right now? She on the beach or something? Right. You know, what is Batman doing right now? Shouldn't he be hovering his bat plane over your cornfield while you're going through an economic drought or something like that? I always picture Batman getting involved in Clark Kent's life and Lois Lane being, are you kidding me? That guy's crazy. And it should be. It should be interconnected, but for some reason they don't connect. But Marvel does, and I like it.
I agree with you. And that's why I like when they pull the threads and kind of make fun of, okay, there's been 3 Hulk. Oh, yeah, it's literally a different person. Just like, okay, we get it. They've had a lot of changes. And then even in the last Spider-Man, Doctor Strange. Kind of like both. I don't know. Everything happened at once. I'm forgetting what.
Yeah, I know.
What's
they
what now.
Meld into each other. Well, they did to give DC a pass at the end of the Justice League show. And the Flash is like giving smack to Aquaman. I'm like, hey, wait, I thought you F fish. And Aquaman's like, no, I don't F fish. And everyone like rolls their eyes. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, that was surprising. I think that's the only DC show that's had it, but any kind of connection to the rest, really.
And they should.
Peacemaker, in case you missed.
Yeah, I can see it can get a little old, but sometimes it's pretty funny, too.
That's why this is great, because we have all this stuff happening and everything being connected with Marvel. And that will lead us to, you know, phase 352 in the future. So, you know, just keep watching.
Speaking of interconnected, Ms. Marvel and, I'm going to say Ghost Rider. It's not Ghost Rider. Have a comic together now. And when my brain starts working again, I will tell you. But go ahead, Sean.
Well, we're going to go to the GLKNH offices. Now, you know at some point I'm going to screw up those letters, just so you know.
Yep.
But anyway, we have Nikki flipping through news reports, not focused on the Abomination, but on Jen. And let's just say the media has not been very nice to her, even though her phone line is being flooded with interview requests. Oh, yes, it's the celebrity of the moment. But Jen doesn't want to give any of her time to any of these people because it's distracting from my work. Makes me wonder if her boss is going to be in soon and be like, you need to do an interview. But walking into Holloway's office, Jen is greeted by none other than her former colleague, Dennis. Oh, Dennis.
Why isn't his name Richard, if you know what I mean?
Yes, it should be.
Jen immediately protests working with him since the two have too much shared work history, and another prosecutor, Mallory Book, who is also dismissed because Dennis doesn't want to work and tell the problems to somebody who's a 10. And I'm looking at her going, wait a minute, I know her. Why do I know her? And I couldn't remember why, but she's been in one of our other shows, Steve. Show is she? It'll come to me again when my brain kicks in.
Yeah.
But by the process of elimination, Pug is put on the case, which we still don't quite know why he's part of the superhero division, but I'm guessing we will find out soon enough.
It's in the comics.
Oh, he's just there. It's not that he has like a hidden thing that he...
Yeah, he's just there. He's a character.
Okay.
Well, what is this case anyway? Well, as Dennis explains, he's been defrauded. But why is it in the superhuman law division? Turns out the woman he's dating, Runa, is a shape-shifting light elf from New Asgard.
Wow.
To be fair, he thought he was dating Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course he was.
Jen can barely contain her laughter when who should appear through a portal? Wong. Taking this cue to leave, Jen and Wong head back to her office where he confesses that, yes, he broke Emil out of the prison. It was all part of his training to assume the position of Sorcerer Supreme, and he needed a worthy opponent. Now that Wong's cleared the air, well, he's good to go home.
Why isn't there a Wong show then? If he's gonna, where's the Wong show?
That's gonna happen. I feel that's gonna happen. Oh, and by the way, the actress's name. Oh, why did I just lose the actress's name? Is Renee Elise Goldsberry? She was in Altered Carbon and Hamilton.
That's why
I knew her. I thought she was in one of our shows, but I think it's just because I was really into Altered Carbon.
Jen explains to him that as soon as the parole board sees the video of Emil fighting his abomination, they're not going to let him go. What to do? Well, Wong doesn't really want to erase everyone's memory because that got messy last time. That's neither here nor there. What about if Wong just shows up to the hearing and explains what he did? Sounds good to him, and he agrees to save sorcery as a backup plan B.
I love the tapping of the nose. It's like, no tapping of the nose. Stop it. Yeah. It's like, sure, plan B. It's like, no, not wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Stop
it. Meanwhile, Pug has been tasked with trying to work on Dennis's case. Turns out Dennis spent a lot of money on this light elf imposter, and Pug knows this isn't going to be an easy case. After leaving the office, Dennis then has a change of heart and suggests that the whole case be dropped. Thankfully, Pug sees through this deception, and soon the light elf Runa reveals herself before rushing out of the office.
I think I read in my notes, she's freaking nuts.
Yes.
In a fun way, but she's nuts.
Starting to wonder if the pod dog might be a light elf all of a sudden when we brought that up.
Sure.
A lot of noise.
Back at the prison, Jen gets ready to make her case in front of the parole board, Emil, and also Emil's 7 soulmates. Because 8's too much. I thought it was 8 is enough. Wasn't it 8 is enough?
Yes, it was.
It was, yeah.
Why? How did they get that wrong? Anyway, they showed up. She explains to them, there's people listening now, I'm like, what are you talking about? 8 is enough. Google it. Come on, man. She explains to them that she's got a witness who can speak to all of Emil's wrongdoing, except Wong is late. Stalling for time, Jen suggests that Emil give his own statements before the parole board. Speaking from the heart, he feels that he has been rehabilitated and has changed emotionally, physically, metaphysically, spiritually, cosmically, interdimensionally, gonna like that one, etc. Getting back on track, Emil has a place to live if he's released and plans to open a meditation facility. Well, I hope Wong is in his series. As for funding, he's relying on the 7 soulmates for that. Just in the nick of time, Wong shows up. Sorry, he lost track of time. That's weird.
Yeah, how?
How? Yeah. As Wong explains, it wasn't Emil's choice to leave, but it was his choice to return to prison. Wong actually offered him sanctuary at Kamar-Taj, but he declined, insisting on returning to prison and repaying his debt to society, because he wants his own spin-off series. While Emil's case might not be going well, what about the one against Abomination? Doesn't he turn into a bloodthirsty monster when he transforms? Nope, this guy just bumps his head in the ceiling and that's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was all weird with Wong's like, listen, he could have done this, but he did this. And then you have all these other people who are like full on crying like, oh, he's done so good. It's like, what is wrong with all of you people? So I was weird.
Just looking at Runa on IMDb. She's a crossover specialist. She's been in Hulk and Doom Patrol.
Ah.
Wow. Boom.
She's got both comics.
Yeah.
Like the big ones under her. All right.
Throw money at me.
Well, hoping to put the parole board's mind at ease. Yeah, that's going to work. Emil transforms into Abomination. And everyone absolutely freaks the hell out, except his 7 soulmates. He's screaming, crying, hiding. Well, the full work. He's in that whole holding cell, so he can't get out. Why are you freaking out and screaming like that? It's like, what the hell? But anyway. Yeah. And Jen begins to yell at him to turn back, but Emil doesn't see what the problem is. He's in full control.
That's when did like he get Hulk,
fins
too.
On his head, too, by the way?
He's had that, I think. Yeah.
Nah, I just think watched ugly. The original.
I don't like him. But he's kind of like the Hulk. He things happen, he's like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean, what? Your big green thing, your big gray thing.
This weirdo. They're freaking out. Look around. But anyway, realizing she's going to have to scramble, Jen uses this to her advantage, turning to the parole board to explain, clearly he could have escaped at any time, but he chose not to. Instead, he stayed behind bars and learned his lesson so he can rejoin society again in the future. Yeah, or try to do something really bad and he's just trying to spin a lot. I don't know.
Well, this if is I enough. Saw somebody come out of a like golden portal on the parole board, I'd be like, what happened? What just happened?
Yeah, hold on a minute.
Yeah, wait a second. You guys are like 10 steps ahead of me.
Yeah, that parole board was all over the place, right?
Mm.
Because apparently, Jen was enough for the parole board to adjourn for the day, and they'll figure out their ruling soon. However, as for Wong, it's noted that he facilitated a prison escape, which is technically a crime. And he's like, gotta go, right back through that portal.
I got my hole, bye.
And hey, let's check in on Pug for a second, because he's also scrambling for help. Turns out the Light Elf is the daughter of a diplomat in New Asgard, so she should have diplomatic immunity. But I don't know if it falls under this particular issue. But I love the judge points out that they're not in New Asgard, and Runa is quick to point out, New Asgard is not a place, it's a people. Listen, unfortunately, Thor's speeches are not admissible in court.
Yeah, I didn't think her argument helped.
I love that, though. And as for Pug's case, he's going to have to prove that Dennis could, in fact, have been duped by Runa for the court to side with him. Which, this was amusing, how this whole thing played out.
Oh, yeah.
Did they have sex? They never even teased that, but
no,
yeah,
never brought up. So
never brought up, but okay, let's move on.
Later that night at the legalese, Jen fills Nikki in on everything that happened and prays for the day this trial is over, so she can go back to being a normal anonymous lawyer who also happens to be a Hulk.
Yeah, okay.
Nikki reminds her that the genie is out of the bottle and there's no use trying to fight it. Hug slides into the bar with them, connecting the A and B story. Nice, yeah. Jen tells us.
Awesome.
Complaining about Dennis as Jen and Nikki chime in that he is terminally deluded and gross. Wait a second. What if she said that under oath to help Pug win his case? Now in court on the witness stand, Jen says a laundry list of not nice things about Dennis. He's self-absorbed, chauvinistic, conceited. She can go on. But the point Pug is getting to is this. Is there any world in which Dennis could actually believe he could pull Megan Thee Stallion? Absolutely.
His world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. It's like, but I had all my bros you could talk to. It's like, no, trust me.
Yeah.
No.
Surprisingly, this is what seals the case, and the judge sides with Pug and Dennis and sentences Runa to 60 days for impersonating a judge.
Oh, that was kind of funny, too.
Oh, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
One Megan Thee Stallion, Megan Thee Stallion says from the back of the court, another cameo.
I was not expecting that.
No. On the way out.
I think we had the same fan, by the way.
Yeah, Dennis complains that he wishes there was a way to stop Runa from using her magic so she doesn't harm anyone else. Even though she hates it, this does give Jen an idea as to what to do with the meal. She proposes that he wear an inhibitor like the one Bruce Banner created to stop him from turning into the abomination. To the parole board, this sounds good. He's thankful for his release, and Jen is excited to go back to just being Jen again. The meal points out that no one's going to forget about her that easy, and if she hates the story being told about her, why not be a part of it? Sigh, that means Jen has to do a damn television interview now, doesn't it? Arriving home that night, Jen is jumped by a bunch of lowlife dudes, aka the Wrecking Crew, each brandishing their own weapon, and the first thing she does is scream.
I wrote in my notes, who are these losers?
Yes. And then she remembers she can turn into She-Hulk. Even though they all brandish their enhanced weapons, they're no match for Jen, who takes them all out one by one. As they flee, she takes a long, hard look at herself in a car window.
Did anyone else think that was a little sad?
Oh, yeah.
She stopped. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, ugh.
And the guy that tried to get a sample of her blood, and that needle is just bent like
Tank.
A pretzel.
I was just trying to figure out the whole deal with these guys anyway, because I'm like, what is going on?
Right.
Why do they look like this? And why is only one of them wearing a ski mask?
The smart one.
Of course, we do get a tag at the end of the episode as Jen walks into her office to find her new favorite client, Megan Thee Stallion. Boy. After signing some paperwork, the two get down to actual business twerking. I would kill for you, Megan Thee Stallion, Jen yells mid-dance, but this is too much for Megan Thee Stallion. Okay, dial it back.
See, with all that excess booty-shaking gait.
Oh, yeah. I love the behind-the-scenes
picture that's been going around on Facebook from, I think, MCU posted it, where it's Tatiana up on a platform with, like, the ping-pong suit.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, her and Megan Thee Stallion dancing. I just thought it was funny because I'm like, okay, she has to be up on there so they have the, you know, the eye contact at the right levels and stuff. But
not quite the Clone Club dance.
No, but still.
No, I'm sad because I missed that.
Yep.
So, Easter eggs. Anyone see a rabbit run by? Duh, Easter eggs. So, Wong has a LinkedIn profile. What? What? Hilariously, Jennifer Walters is able to track Wong because he has a LinkedIn profile. Good grief, the Sorcerer Supreme. It appears to claim he's the first to move to Kamar-Taj to run a local branch of Target and then work as a librarian there for 11 years before graduating to the position of Sorcerer Supreme. The profile page is careful to conceal the precise MCU timeline, thank God, carefully removing any references to date, but it presumably implies a difference in training between Wong and Doctor Strange. Dr. Strange's timeline is similarly unclear. He is believed to have joined the Masters of the Mystic Art in 2016 or 17 before being erased by Thanos' snap in 2018. Wong survived the snap and so has had 7 or 8 years more training than Strange. Unfair. One oddity is that Wong's LinkedIn page claims the Sorcerer Supreme is based in New York. This is remarkable, departure from Dr. Strange, where the Sorcerer Supreme is based in Kamar-Taj. And New York Sanctum Sanctorum has a prominent member of the Master of Arts as a keeper. From an episode, from an in-universe perspective, this may reflect Wong fearing Doctor Strange is too reckless to operate it while it's a vision. Are you kidding? Wong can't even tell what time it is.
Yeah. Can't make it to a court date.
So episode 3 mocks the show's critics. Episode 3 mocks critics of the show. And in truth, phase 4 in general. It's a series of clips in social media posts, supposedly from everyday people in the MCU. Some express distaste that Hulk powers have been given to a woman. Really? Where have you been? Others complain that every superhero is being turned into a girl and nobody asked for that. Ugh, get over it. It's an amusing joke, but rather on the nose. Yeah? Well, that's the world we live in, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's like, have you not picked up any of these comic books?
I know.
Like, no, absolutely not.
It's not like it's a brand new thing, okay?
Ugh. So are you okay?
No.
I think I rolled my eyes so hard I could see my brain.
I think I could hear your eyes roll. So She-Hulk's strangest Marvel cameo explained. Episode 3 features an odd cameo from Gideon Wilson, the attorney who apparently prosecuted the Abomination back in 2011. In the comics, he's a former minister and the brother of Sam Wilson. Yep, the Falcon. Gideon went on to become a superhuman in his own rights, a member of the Gamma Corps, exposed to gamma radiation. So that lends credence to the people who have problems with, why is this a woman? Why is the woman? Are you kidding? Everyone's anything. Doesn't matter who you are in the comic.
Right.
Anything applies, and they'll go anywhere.
And I don't know, maybe because women make up a very large percentage of the world, that chances are that would happen.
Yep.
I mean, what? God.
Not if you live in your basement. Mom, I'm hungry.
Oh my God. Just like the people who were like bitching that they said Captain America wasn't a virgin. Really?
Yeah.
You thought that when he grew old with Peggy, what, that they never had sex? I mean, duh?
How do you think he became captain? He was just Lieutenant American until...
Oh, episode 3 introduces a Light Elf. A new Asgard subplot officially introduces Rune, a Light Elf whose shape-shifting powers have caused some legal problems. Rune is the daughter of a Light Elf diplomat who was on Asgard during Hela's brief reign. And she and her family are numbered among the refugees who settled on New Asgard. It seems they heard Thor's inspirational speech that Asgard is a people, not a place, because she unwisely attempts to use it to formulate a legal defense. Although there have been previous nods to the Light Elves of Sabaratilum in the MCU, this is the first time one has been seen in action.
And she's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Figures Wong got the goofy one.
Wong only became Sorcerer Supreme during Shang-Chi. Jen Walters gets a surprise visitor with Wong admitting Abomination was telling the truth. Surprisingly, he claims the fight with Abomination was part of the trials to become Sorcerer Supreme, meaning Wong only became Sorcerer Supreme during Phase 4. Earth was without a Sorcerer Supreme from roughly 2017 or 2018 through 2024, rather longer than anyone had previously realized.
Gosh.
During the conversation, Wong makes reference to spells that can erase memories all over the world. He is, of course, referring to the runes of Kul'kul seen in Spider-Man No Way Home. Wong's words imply the runes have been used on many occasions, perhaps explaining how the masters of the mystic arts protected the world from magic for centuries without becoming public knowledge.
Now it's public knowledge and it affects human law. They're like, well, you may have broke the law, but it was like, this is a Wong thing, so time out.
Yeah. But Wong also name drops the mirror dimension from Doctor Strange in Spider-Man No Way Home and the shadow dimension from Thor Love and Thunder, adding a further dimension to his cameo.
That was cracking me up.
People must be like, why do I watch the news?
Yes.
I'm like, they're going to just start shipping people to these other dimensions. That's great. That's going to work out just great for the MCU. Episode 3 features an unexpected nod to She-Hulk's origin in the comics. While attempting to leave the parole hearing, Jennifer Walters is asked to comment on rumors she became She-Hulk after a mafia hit went bad, which is a pretty fair summary of the comic book plot, which I thought was great that they finally put something in. But of course, the MCU's on-screen version is a little bit more spectacular, incorporating an alien spaceship. Maybe it was a hit, too. I mean, we don't know. Maybe it was Space Mafia. I mean, prove me wrong right now.
I love that patch on my jacket.
and the Wrecking Crew making their MCU debut. These weirdos were the ones that were seen attacking Jennifer Walters in this episode. In the comics, this group is enhanced by stealing a enchanted construction worker's items and gain their powers from a freaking lightning strike. And they've been regular opponents of Thor. Are you serious? These guys were Thor's opponents? I feel like Thor would just be like, pop, and there they go. Mjolnir would take them out in like half a second. Because I still don't figure out why the guy with the helmet was like whipping his head around. It's like, what are you doing? Are you singing that song, I Whip My Hair Back and Forth? What are you doing? It's like, I don't get it.
I can see him standing up to
these
Thor.
These guys had to be hired by Rosanna Dana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, let's see, the on-screen version of the crew apparently robbed an Asgardian builder, stealing his mystic tools, meaning they lack any powers in their own right. Let's keep it that way, because these guys were too dumb to have powers. Suffice it to say, they're much less threatening than their comic book equivalent. The Wrecking Crew is working for someone, however, and their boss clearly knows more about She-Hulk than anybody else, and it kind of was interesting. Like I said, one guy was wearing the ski mask, and I'm like, okay, we must know this guy, is what I'm thinking.
I wonder if this is the part where I got my intuition. Like, there's a background person pulling strings.
Right.
Who might it be? Are we going to see the colonel again? Or general, whatever the hell he is. But anyway, She-Hulk Episode 1 revealed the secret of gamma mutation lies in the blood of Bruce Banner and Jennifer Walters, and the Wrecking Crew's boss clearly knows this and wants that sample of blood. Obviously they fail because, yeah, that thing just bent. But it's certainly going to set up a main arc, possibly the main villain coming in. We'll see. I don't know. These guys are too dumb to be anything that pulls anything off. Come on.
Well, they're not the first ones to steal weapons or tools.
No.
Become something else in the Marvel Universe.
They're as bad as the tracksuit mafia.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen Vulture's crew do it. So, yeah. These guys are just really
dim-witted.
There must
be a lot of it out there.
Dim-witted people stealing technology. Yeah.
Super weapons. What could go wrong?
Yeah. Of course, I guess it could be the big guy.
The big guy.
Oh, that would be the way to try to pull it all through.
Yep.
Why we're going to see the other cameo that we know we're going to see.
Yes. Get Burdick back into the show.
Okay. Interesting.
Well, as always, we do have some feedback for this episode from our friend Fred from the Netherlands. So let's hear what he thinks of it.
Hello, Steve, Dave, and Sean, and all listeners to the Van Gogh Zone. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, Season 1, Episode 3. Okay, let's talk about the elephant in the room. I didn't like this episode that much. I found it was a little bit all over the place. Problem, of course, is when the episodes are only 25-30 minutes and you have a kind of B story and it needs some room, it gets half of the story. So in that case, the whole Dennis and the Megan T. Stallion story was a little bit too big for me. This Dennis is, of course, over the top, but it really is over the top. And that is, of course, a good basis for some humor. But because it's too much, also the humoristic effect goes a little bit down the drain by that. I hope they will dim it a little bit. And then I noticed I'm not fully equipped for American culture because this Megan T. Stallion didn't ring a bell at all with me. And for a matter of fact, even in the Marvel Universe. So I discovered I missed a whole Marvel movie about Shang-Chi and the Legends of the Ten Rings. Talking about rings, I really, really like the new series, The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. So magnificent. And now I understand the Emil Blonsky reference and Wong, because I did see Doctor Strange, the first film, from 2016. I have not seen the newest one yet. So probably I will go back to the 2008 Hulk film and to the Shang-Chi film. of 2021 and the newest Doctor Strange movie. So thank you, She-Hulk, for putting three movies on my to watch list. Funny fact is, when I looked up this Megan Thee Stallion, if that was really a thing, I landed up in one of her major hits, probably called Her, as a major rap song. But she is singing there about she. I really wonder if she is referring to She-Hulk there.
Bitch, I'm her, 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 her. She.
Coincidence? I don't know. So what is humor at the right level for me? For instance, Jen putting the microphone straight up again after Wong left. That's funny. And that's subtle. But I think if you want subtlety, this is not the right series for you. But as Jen said, connecting the A and B story did work. Dennis gave her the idea to get Emil free if he promises not to use his powers anymore. I love the conceptual art again. And the mid-end credits scene was, of course, fun. Yes, it was. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Thanks, Fred. So he didn't like it.
Oh, he didn't. But he got some movies he needs to watch out of it.
Yeah, so. Right.
So that's
good.
So
he thought the B story was a problem only because of the time constraints and it took too much time. But then that's when she leaned in and explained the whole thing. I wonder, part of my, intuition about upcoming darkness is because Dennis is stupid to make a problem. I don't know. I think he should have that big a role in the show, but you never know.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm glad he likes Lord of the Rings, although I think House of Dragons slightly ahead of it right now. Ah, agreed. See? Pod Dog agrees. Case closed.
Yes, the Pod Dog is continuing to agree, too.
Well, if you didn't have an elf or a neighbor.
Right. Maybe things would be fine. I am a little... I don't want to say I'm not surprised that you hadn't heard of Megan Thee Stallion.
No.
But, I mean,
Megan
I don't
Thee
know...
Stallion?
I don't know how big she is, like, across the world. I mean, I know she's pretty big here. So... She could be huge, and I'm sure she's touring all over, but just maybe she's just like
bigger
on the radio in the Netherlands. Who knows? So, but yeah, she is a real person, obviously a real singer.
So I have another premonition. We're going to see Fred with his shirt off, tied around his forehead at one of her concerts, screaming and yelling.
You might really like, I don't know, maybe if you find some of the other ones. Ask your kids, Fred. Maybe they know who she is. I am a little disappointed that you're not liking it, but yeah, like you said, this isn't like this doesn't take itself seriously. So if you don't like that kind of show, I'm not sure you're going to really love how this is going.
Right. And I'm in complete agreement with you that Greg needs to go. He's not needed in this series whatsoever.
Dennis?
Yeah, Dennis.
Well, they're setting him up for something. Maybe he will cause trouble for Jennifer by doing something utterly stupid.
Oh, right. But, yeah. But, he'll do the TV interview.
Yeah. Do I want to see that? Actually, I don't.
Yeah.
Actually, how I that would plays
because
out,
I'd love to see Jen just beat him down afterwards for being the chauvinistic pig that he is.
So he's going to screw up something for her.
Oh, yeah.
In court. And guess who else is a major lawyer in the MCU? Oh, it's Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yeah, tie in, baby. I can see it now. Maybe that's
you
how
you think
it
that's how it's going to tie in?
Maybe. Why not? Legal help right now. I'm in trouble. Who do we know as a lawyer? Boom. Matt. Thank you, Matt. You're also Daredevil. Oops, spoiler alert.
You didn't know.
Do you where my brain work? I hope so. I hope it works that way. We'll see.
Yep. Well, as always, Fred, we really appreciate your feedback and love hearing your thoughts on every episode of She-Hulk Attorney at Law, and looking forward to hearing from you next week.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com.
Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcast. With good ratings and reviews, it helps us other fans of the show find us. As there are plenty of other Marvel podcasts out there. Tell your friends, and I hope you're enjoying our podcast. And don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts. Right, Sean?
We have so many that you might enjoy. Like, I don't know. You can go check out the Captain's Chair, for instance.
Oh, I know
the Mudhorn Clan Cast.
Yeah, those are so awesome.
They are. But you can also find all of our contact information at www.fangirlzone.com and click our contacts page. Yes, I know everything looks weird. We are reworking the website. It's going to take a while. So depending on when you hear this, hopefully I will have my crap together and have it fixed. But I also take all sorts of information on how to fix it. So, hey, you know how. Let me know. So for this episode of the Marvelous Post-Split Podcast,
I'm Hulk Steve. Oh, you're way more fun than my last lawyer.
I'm Sean Fangirl S, and if somebody's going to just happen to give me $175,000 because they think I'm someone else, I'm not going to argue with them either.
Oh, I was just about to do that. This is Mischievous Dave, and did you know another one of my porn names was the Abomination? But I can't tell you how I got it.
Thank God.
There is nothing wrong with your internet. Do not attempt to adjust your settings. We are controlling the podcast. We control the squealing and the screams. We can make your heart flutter, your eyes blur from tears, or sharpen your mind to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit back. We are in control of what you hear. We repeat. There is nothing wrong with your settings. You are about to experience the awe and mystery known as the female mind. You are now entering the Fangirl Zone.